Hello, it's Wednesday, 26th of August. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bowerman from Check In Asia.
On this week's show, we're journeying to Bali to discuss what went wrong with its planned reopening of international tourism in September.
It's been the most anticipated story in Asian travel for several weeks now, but it's ended in a bust. So, let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Well, after 2 months of keeping us hanging on, Bali confirmed on Sunday afternoon that it will now not reopen to international tourists on the 11th September. It's a huge financial and psychological blow to tourism in Indonesia and across the region, but perhaps not a big surprise. You wrote about this a couple of weeks ago for Travel Daily, Gary, so are you surprised?
I have to say I'm not hugely surprised, Hannah. I think this was being signposted, wasn't it, for a couple of weeks before it actually happened.
Yeah.
When they announced this potential reopening back in June, it seemed a possibility, but events, as we'll talk about, have conspired against it, and particularly the coronavirus cases in Indonesia. So it doesn't seem a great surprise to me.
No. The same. I'm not hugely surprised. You know, we were just saying earlier, when they started floating this idea back in June, it did seem like it could happen. It was still halfway through the year, right? There was still optimism. And now we're at the end of August and everybody's just looking at 2021. And it's not surprising that they've made this decision, I think.
No. And as we said in the intro there, you know, the whole of Asia was looking towards this as a sign for progression for the tourism industry to reboot confidence, to reboot revenues, to reboot travel flows.
Yeah.
Sadly, that's all gone. So. Okay, so we're going to rewind back through the process of reopening that Bali's governor, Wayan Koster, set out back in June. And we'll sift through some of Bali's travel statistics as well. We'll also discuss the key reasons for the delay in the reopening, which may not happen now until 2021, and what this will mean for the travel sector in Indonesia and across Southeast Asia. But first, Hannah, let's hear what the governor said at the weekend when he announced that Bali's reopening plan wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, so he announced... The Indonesian government is still enforcing a policy that prohibits its citizens from travelling abroad, at least until the end of 2020. And he said because of that, Indonesian government has not been able to open the door for foreign tourists to Indonesia until the end of the year because Indonesia is still in the red zone category. He also said the situation in Indonesia is not yet conducive to allowing foreign tourists to visit. And according to him, a little bit weirdly, he said there is no country in the world that has allowed its citizens to travel abroad. I mean, I think our listeners and Gary knows that's not quite true. There are quite a few countries that are allowing this. But for them, he says Australia, whose citizens travel the most to Bali, is only planning to allow its citizens to travel in 2021. Likewise, China, Korea, Japan, and countries in Europe. So, I mean, I guess for him, he is taking very much a Bali point of view when he was saying no countries are allowing their citizens out. But that was that, really. And that's been picked up in the media. Headlines everywhere saying Bali, Indonesia not opening until 2021.
Yeah, there were two problems that they always had.
Mm.
One was they announced this 3 months in advance. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the phases of reopening, but they did set this hard deadline of September the 11th, which they did say in the lead up, particularly in the couple of weeks before, that could move, which kind of signposted that it wasn't going to happen. But setting that hard deadline during a very, very dynamic situation was always going to prove problems. And as you mentioned there, Hannah, you know, the key inbound markets for Bali seem that they were just not likely to allow their travellers to visit, perhaps for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Which gave Bali no option but to delay.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's also a little point in opening up and then having nobody being able to come in. So it's almost even worse, I think, in a way, because all of the businesses would be open, maybe they'd have hired back staff, ready for this influx of tourists, and very few might arrive.
Yeah, so the focus now for the rest of the year, as the Bali governor said, will be trying to drive more domestic travellers to come to Bali. But let's take a step back, Hannah. Let's have a look at where Bali actually was in terms of international travel at the end of 2019. Bali had seen particularly strong growth over the last decade, particularly since 2010, largely since the mining boom in Australia, when the Australian currency started to boom.
Yeah.
Australian tourists, obviously Bali is very, very close. It was a great holiday destination, so more of them travelled, primarily because it was cheaper to travel to Bali than it was to travel domestically in Australia. But that also engendered quite a great deal of loyalty. A lot of Australians that travel to Bali since that period tend to go back, and quite a lot of them go more than once a year.
Yes.
So there is a high degree of loyalty of travel to Bali.
Absolutely. I mean, and when you're looking at the, you know, who are the top arrivals to Bali, like we were saying, Australia is number one and been number one for quite some time. Even back in 2016, it was still number one. So last year, there are about 1.2 million Australians visiting. That closely was followed by China. And I think China and Australia have been kind of battling it out to be number one over the past few years. They came in at about 1.2 million. And then you've got other countries which are increasing. So you've got countries like India, which is third at the minute. That's increased almost 200,000 actually since 2016. So we're really seeing a strong increase from India. You've still got markets like the UK, the USA, Japan, South Korea, France, Germany, even Malaysia. And if you're looking at countries from 2016 to 2019, they haven't really changed actually. All of those countries are all in the top 10, just in a slightly different order.
Yeah, I mean, the Indian market is quite an interesting one, because as you said there, it's pretty much doubled in terms of arrivals. 372,000 arrivals last year.
Yeah.
Now, I've noticed going to Bali over the last, particularly the last 18 months, there are definitely more Indian travelers. One of the problems for the Indian market is a lot of its tourists have to transit through other airports. So I know that Bali was looking to increase the number of direct flights from Indian cities to Bali, and that probably would have happened. Circumstances prevailing.
I mean, and actually that's something that Garuda Indonesia is even looking at now. I think we mentioned a few episodes ago that they are looking to establish more direct air connections with even countries like America, with countries like France as well, just to avoid that whole transit issue and encourage people to be able to fly directly there. So, I mean, overall, if we're looking, you know, the increase was pretty small between 2018 to 2019. It was about 3.4%. So I think that it is slowing down somewhat, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was starting to slow. I think there are a number of reasons for that. One is the greater competition to attract tourists in the region, the strong rise in the last couple of years of Japan and Korea, particularly from Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
A lot of travelers have been going to those destinations. Australia's remained relatively strong.
Yeah.
So, you know, Bali has a lot of competition. There was also the angle that some of its areas, particularly Kuta, is just too commercialized. But you can get out to the west and the east, which are beautiful areas. So it did really need to kind of refocus its positioning a little bit more.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the infrastructure in Kuta is definitely built for Australian tourists.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it needed to look at that.
I mean, and that's going to be a challenge that it will be facing, you know, when they're looking to attract domestic tourists as well, is how do they re-gear some of those businesses that were aimed towards overseas tourists, gear them towards domestic tourists, at least for the next few months if they want to survive until the end of 2020.
But although growth had slowed slightly, Bali still accounted for more than one third of all international visitors to Indonesia. So, you know, the economy is very, very reliant on tourism. You only have to arrive at Kuta and you see straight away that, you know, much of the industry is set up around the tourism sector.
Last year, it had about 6.23 million arrivals into Bali. Now, Jakarta only had 2.41 million, and that's the capital city. So that just goes to show just how connected Bali was, how important Bali is as a gateway to Indonesia for international tourists.
Yeah. And so if you look at the arrivals figures, and the majority of those figures were international, but there were almost 5 million domestic arrivals last year.
Yes.
And that's going to be the focus going forward, obviously for the rest of this year.
But the interesting thing with that, though, is that whilst international arrivals grew 12% compared to 2018, domestic arrivals actually fell 10%. So, you know, I think we were talking last week about this 10 new Bali strategy with the government trying to focus on different domestic tourism destinations. Perhaps that played into it. And they were actually succeeding in spreading those domestic tourists to different destinations within Indonesia. Or perhaps there was just starting to be a lack of interest and a realization, there are other places to go and visit.
Yeah. Hold that thought, because we'll come back to that later. So if we actually go back another step, if we go back to the middle of June, now Bali actually announced that it was going to reopen in three phases.
Yes.
You know, it had been, the whole island had pretty much closed down from March for the coronavirus reasons. So the three phases were that from the 9th of July, local tourism and F&B businesses and its beaches, most of its beaches were closed for a couple of months, plus government offices, construction, transport, and logistics businesses were able to open from that date, from 9th of July. The second phase began on the 31st of July, and this is the critical phase, really.
Yes.
And that's when there was a long weekend break for the Eid al-Adha holiday, and domestic tourists were permitted to fly into Bali from across Indonesia. So that was kind of, then that was going to be the test case of, well, from the 31st of July up until the 11th of September, when international tourists were expected to be allowed back.
Yes.
A test case to see whether it could actually work and how case numbers would increase during that period.
Yeah. And of course, you know, domestic tourists did start to return, didn't we? So, you know, we saw from the 1st to 19th of August, there are about 49,000 pax flying into Bali. And actually on the 19th of August, they had the highest number compared to previous days, domestic tourists of 4,056. So, I mean, compared to very, very low numbers, this is quite promising. And of course, we've just had a long weekend as well, August 19th to 23rd, the government declared Friday to be an additional public holiday. And there, the passenger traffic in domestic airports reached 18,603 passengers with an average of about 4,650 pax per day. You know, 225 flights, an arrival of 56 landing planes per day. So again, it's good, right? This is an encouraging sign that things are starting to pick up.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you look at where those visitors arrived from. And the two dominant flight routes during that period were from Jakarta to Denpasar, Bali, and Surabaya to Denpasar, Bali. Mm. Now, I mean, I've been in Bali during the National Day holiday, which is in August, and you do get a lot of Jakartans and Surabayans there every single year.
Yeah.
They're the two big feeder markets domestically.
Makes sense.
So, you know, that's following a pattern that you would expect. You'd imagine it's got to start expanding to bring in visitors from other cities who wants to up the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, and actually AirAsia, Indonesia, just announced that they are actually expanding their domestic flights to Bali from the 1st of September. So they're going to start flying from Labuan Bajo, Lombok, Yogyakarta, and Solo all to Bali. So that is, again, going to boost those domestic numbers, isn't it? It's going to be, you know, provide more competitive airfares, allowing people to be able to travel there as well. But of course, you know, domestic tourists still need to take tests. They still need to have proof of negative test results to be able to enter the island. So there is that additional cost, there is that additional hassle factor for domestic travel within Indonesia.
So we started to see, with this date looming, and we're still, what, about 2 or 3 weeks away from the 11th of September when it's actually announced that this won't happen, but we were starting to see some movements happening. So for example, during the lockdown periods, around 7,000 foreign citizens, mostly travellers, have been living in Bali on no visa, you know, that they've overstayed visas which expired. And a couple of weeks ago, Bali authorities announced that those tourists that were the overstayed visas had to sort out a renewal of their visa by August of the 20th, because they were probably trying to clear the way for the new wave of tourists that were coming in. That then got delayed until September the 20th, which was a kind of a signpost that if people are being allowed to stay a little bit longer, that there wasn't going to be this overlap of more visitors coming in. And then the issue is, of course, that Bali actually doesn't set the rules of who can come in and out. Mm. It's the Indonesian federal government.
Yeah.
So that was always an issue,
that
Bali would have to get the law changed because foreign citizens are actually banned from entering Indonesia.
I mean, and it's again, isn't it? It's this regional versus federal, state versus federal government kind of issues that we have seen raising up in other countries throughout Southeast Asia as well. Even they've Bali floated the idea of a digital nomad visa in late July, and that was their vice governor this time who suggested this. And, you know, I think it's a pretty decent idea, actually. Bali's got great infrastructure. The advantage of having these kind of digital nomads is they do tend to stay within the community. They do tend to spend money within the community as well. It seemed like pretty decent, but still, there's still this question mark, right, about whether it will go, whether it can even go ahead. Because borders are still closed.
Yeah, but then there were mixed messages. The transportation minister had encouraged international airports across the country, and he singled out Yogyakarta to open up in an effort to help the national economy to recover. He said Yogyakarta already has the infrastructures and cultural potentials to attract both domestic and foreign tourists. And now we have to make efforts to recover the economy and tourism in Yogyakarta. So this wasn't just about Bali. This was, you know, Bali was sort of the barometer of what could happen, I suppose.
It is. And actually, there was a really nice quote from an owner of Citra Gilangtour in Indonesia. And he said, Bali is the barometer of Indonesia's tourism. The reopening of the island will automatically drive the wheel of the tourism sector in other regions. And I think there's a, you know, there's a great sense to that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also a barometer for Southeast Asia. As, as we said at the beginning, you know, everybody was looking for this to happen. Yeah. It really was seen as a sort of unclogging of this bottleneck of travel. There's clearly demand to travel to Bali from across the region, across Asia for sure.
Yes.
And if the borders were open and people were able to travel, I think they would do so. And at that time as well, also, Indonesia was sort of preparing the world for the fact that it's actually signed up some deals to produce a vaccine for next year. The president said yesterday, I think, or the day before, that they could have 290 million doses of the vaccine ready next year.
Right.
And they will be prioritized on the Indonesian market.
Yeah, I think they've buddied up to the UAE and China for those.
But yeah, they've done.
Good buddies to have.
Absolutely. The state-owned biopharma company is collaborating with China's Sinovac and a company from the UAE. So they're not only going to be importing cases once they're produced, once they're tested, but they're also going to be building a facility to actually produce them in Indonesia.
Hopefully there will be light at the end of the tunnel.
There will be light at the end of the tunnel. But obviously since that announcement back in June that Bali was going to do a three-phase opening, culminating in September the 11th of international tourism coming back, a lot has happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've seen Bali's economy contract by 1.1% in Q1, 10.9% in Q2. So that would definitely have been a lever for the reopening, right? That would make people want to reopen. But at the same time now, end of August, Asia has now had the full time to see what has happened with Europe's reopening, haven't they?
They've been able
to see Europe reopening, countries closing on other countries, quarantines imposed on other countries, and the big mess that is caused, and the subsequent rise in cases from that too. And that's going to make everybody very nervous about thinking about opening up travel without quarantines needed.
Yeah, and the knock-on effects that will have into the winter market as well, because a lot of the winter market from Europe comes to Asia.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a possibility that countries will be closed or in lockdown, or certainly there's going to be travel restrictions. So that's going to stymie whatever there was going to be of a long-haul market this winter.
Yeah.
But we've also had some issues in Asia as well.
Yeah.
I think the Beijing outbreak, which happened towards the end of June, I think that really spooked the industry. It spooked China, which is obviously a key market for Indonesia.
Yes.
And that kind of seems to have set China on a course to slam its borders shut for longer than maybe it would have done.
Yeah. Yeah, Australia, of course, we had the lockdown in Melbourne. Even within Australia itself, Victorian citizens aren't able to travel interstate. And then we've had these second waves or third waves, or I think even, is it fourth wave in Hong Kong? I've lost track now. You've got Hong Kong, Japan, South Korea, even Vietnam, which had gone 99 days without a case.
Yeah.
They got a case.
Yeah.
So this has just had that knock-on effect. You know, Thailand has called itself very, very cautious. Malaysia is saying it's inevitable that there'll be a second wave if borders are reopened. And within that climate, it would be very difficult for Indonesia to see its ASEAN peers not reopening and then take that decision that they are going to reopen.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there's the actual issues in Indonesia itself.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go back to the 15th of June, there were 38,277 confirmed cases with 2,134 deaths. If you bring that forward 2 months to the 15th of August, 135,123 cases and 6,021 deaths. Now, you have to say that the actual official recorded death rate compared to the number of cases is relatively low.
Yes.
But it's still 6,000 people.
Yeah.
And at the moment, yesterday, they had the highest number of daily deaths, 99, since the 23rd of July. So the suppression of the virus hasn't happened. It is still rampant in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a key factor for markets that were thinking of allowing their travelers to go to Indonesia.
Yeah.
They're just not going to allow that to happen.
No, Indonesia is still most definitely going to be on the do not travel, avoid all essential travel list from many, many governments.
Yeah. And if you look at Bali itself, when domestic travelers were allowed to re-enter on the 31st of July, it had 3,360 cases and 48 deaths. Hasn't gone up too much. On the 24th of August, Bali's cases totaled 4,650 with 54 deaths. There are currently 538 people in hospital. So the numbers haven't gone up hugely, but it's the Indonesia figures that would be worrying the the outbound market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and with 538 currently in hospital, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that Bali has a very robust medical infrastructure as well. So just the fact that there are already people in these hospitals, are you going to risk running out of bed space?
Certainly the capacity. Certainly the capacity would be challenged for sure. And then there would be the issues that that would have for things like travel insurance.
Yeah.
For travellers that were thinking of going.
So what impact will this have on Indonesia and Southeast Asian travel industry? I mean, it's going to have a huge impact, isn't it? If the country is not set to reopen until potentially the year end, maybe 2021, can companies survive? You know, we've seen this new tourist trade petition where they're trying to gather 5,000 signatures that the Indonesian Inbound Tour Operators Association started up just to try and convince Parliament to reopen. By 23rd of August, they had 3,200 signatures from travel companies across Indonesia and Bali.
Yeah, sadly so. There was a report in TTG Asia yesterday which said that basically, you know, with this extra period, many travel businesses will go bankrupt. It's almost inevitable.
Yep.
And as part of that petition that you were mentioning there, they quoted Jimmy Saputra, who's the CEO of Pegasus Indonesia.
Mm.
And his quote is, it's heartbreaking. He said, "We, the travel companies, are dying and the government has not given us any financial assistance. We are also categorized as high-risk debtor by banks, so none of them will give us credit."
Yeah, it's tough in Indonesia right now, I think, that the situation. I mean, you've even seen large tour operators like Panorama, who issued a press statement last week saying essentially that their departments have all stopped for the meantime. And this is one of the largest ones, both for inbound and outbound in Indonesia. And they're saying that they're not working. What are the smaller ones? But what's their state going to be? And not good.
Yeah, I mean, Indonesia is a huge country. The numbers are always huge.
Mm.
But if you look at the Indonesian Hotel and Restaurant Association, it says that as of July, the pandemic has already wiped out around 85 trillion rupiah from Indonesia's tourism revenue. That's an astonishing figure.
Yes. Yeah, and, you know, more than 151,000 tourism industry workers in Jakarta alone have had payroll cuts, furloughs and layoffs as of the 19th of August. I don't think I have seen any specific stats about the number of unemployed in Bali. Have you seen anything? No.
I haven't, but
but I imagine it's as big.
Absolutely, absolutely. and I know for sure that there are like food banks and soup kitchens on the streets.
Yeah.
And then the Indonesian Hotel General Manager Association's Bali chapter said that everybody had pinned their hopes on the governing offering a stimulus to attract local tourists to Bali. But he made a good point. With the reduction in income and some not having any source of earnings, it is impossible for them, domestic tourists, to come to Bali. So the actual demand factor could be quite low because of the actual impact in the big cities that draw travellers to Bali.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it isn't just tourism workers, it's all workers.
Yeah. And then those that do come, Bali's deputy governor appealed to Australians not to forget the island because she said domestic tourism isn't simply sustainable. With the quote that domestic tourists are not the same as foreign tourists. Many domestic tourists have their own houses or villas here, and many stay with family. Mm. So obviously for the hotel industry, domestic tourists aren't going to provide that reboot that they need.
Right, they're not. No, it's not going to counteract that foreign spend that they would normally see.
So what really are the lessons from this failed reboot? And there are a number, I think. Mm. One, as we said earlier, is that if you set hard deadlines for reopening during such a dynamic situation, it really creates a jigsaw that you have to piece together.
Yeah.
The absence of travel bubbles is causing terrible trouble across the region.
Yes. You know,
with borders being closed, quarantines imposed, it's impossible to actually reboot a destination of the nature and the importance of Bali.
Yeah.
You need markets to come. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
On a more strategic note, I think it does highlight those lost weeks and months at the beginning of the pandemic when suppression wasn't actually taken as serious as it should have been.
Yeah.
You know, we are now 8 months into this pandemic and we're still seeing the numbers that we're seeing, not just in Indonesia, this is in other countries as well.
Yeah, worldwide.
But you know, that aim for maximum suppression, of actually clearing the virus out of a country like New Zealand has really worked hard to do. Obviously, New Zealand has a small population, it's a small island, and it's much easier to do. But you know, these effects are lingering because at the beginning of this process, some of that hard work, that testing, that tracing, the contact tracing wasn't done at a high enough level. And we're seeing the ongoing impact of that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is going to make other countries also a little bit wary about promising plans that might not happen, actually. So I'm not saying that it will put governments off planning. I think governments have still got different plans. Thailand, Phuket Safe and Sealed is a great example of that. But I think that they will just feel a little bit more wary about putting a firm date on these things now, because they've seen that anticipation, you know, and I think TTG Asia even reported that some Russian tourists had even booked to come to Bali in September and October. And then, of course, it's all falling flat on its face.
Yeah, I think the other thing that this probably highlights is the fact that we're not going back to mass tourism anytime soon.
Mm.
I think this shows the power that the big markets have in choosing where and when their travelers can visit.
Mm.
You know, you look at, in our region, if you look at China, you look at India, you look at Japan, you look at Korea, you look at Malaysia, you look at Thailand, they're going to be very, very selective as they reopen as to where their tourists can visit. Now, we know, because the people we talked to in the institute, there is pent-up demand for travel.
Mm.
If you surveyed people in a lot of countries, would you travel to Bali tomorrow if you could, they would probably say yes. If you ask their government ministers, are you going to allow them to do that, they may say no.
Yeah.
So there is going to be a big standoff here between what consumers actually want to do and what governments are going to allow them to do. And I think that's possibly one of the big lessons from Bali. I think the other thing is that, you know, Bali had put in place this idea that it was going to have strict protocols, strict procedures for inbound tourists. But, you know, that's just not enough. No. Quarantines, procedures, protocols. This is about the virus.
Yeah.
I think it's as assured as that. The Phuket example, you know, they're trying to be safe and sealed and clean and actually cut people off from actually having access to the virus. But as we mentioned, you know, this is quite a political game, and green zones, green lanes, and traveling between green destinations, possibly for the foreseeable future, is the only way that destinations are going to open up to any degree of tourism.
Yeah. I would just say the only hopeful thing here is, although it is not for leisure travel, I think Indonesia right now in Southeast Asia has the most number of negotiated travel corridors. Yep. So they've now got ones with South Korea, with China, and with the UAE. That's three. No one else has got to three yet. So they clearly have got some negotiating power there, and they are working behind the scenes, but unfortunately it's just not for leisure travel right now.
Yeah, and they're obviously pinning a lot of hopes on that on the vaccine, on being able to supply and distribute the vaccine quickly as soon as they can.
Yep.
That seems to be where they're pinning their hopes. The Tourism and Creative Economy Minister said that economic recovery of the tourism sector will become a major government focus in 2021. He said the government will allocate 14.4 trillion rupiah for tourism development next year. But of course, this is next year. We've still got 4 months of this year to go. And he said that they will actually prioritize, as you mentioned earlier, Hannah, five destinations in terms of where that funding is going to be placed.
Yeah.
Now, Bali isn't included on that list. It's Lake Toba, it's Borobudur, it's Labuan Bajo, it's Mandalika, and it's Likupang.
Interesting. So Bali's going to be cut off.
And Lombok is not included in that list. I'm quite surprised.
That is surprising. So we'll see. I guess, like you say, they're pinning everything on 2021. They're planning towards 2021. And let's just hope perhaps they will make an announcement earlier than that about a potential reopening. But right now, like you say, Bali is closed.
Yeah. So before we finish, Hannah, let's just opening out a little bit to the region. What do you think the impact is going to be on tour operators and travel agents in the region? Were they pinning hopes on this, or did they just not think it was going to happen?
I mean, I think a lot of them in the region, particularly in Southeast Asia, were not thinking so much about Indonesia at this point. I think they're still quite spooked by the number of cases that Indonesia has, you know, the second highest in Southeast Asia. So Bali was not necessarily a top tourism destination for Southeast Asians to be traveling to right now. But certainly, you know, if you look wider, you look at Russia, you look at the UK, this is going to have a knock-on effect to tour operators in Australia as well. Look at, you know, those countries. They're really going to be rethinking their marketing plans. And, you know, as we've said earlier, Christmas, New Year period is always a peak period for European markets. They might well now be replanning to promote other destinations for that period as opposed to Bali. So that brings us to the end of this week's Bali special edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show. We hope you enjoyed the show, and as always, we'd love to read your comments and feedback on anything we've said or missed out. So send us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or contact us on Facebook at The SEA Travel Show. And you can look out for our daily travel insights and podcast news on our LinkedIn page, The Southeast Asia Travel Show, and Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah, in the meantime, you can catch up with our 32 previous episodes of The Southeast Asia Travel Show and 3 episodes of The Friday Rewind Show on our website, theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify and Google Podcasts. Just search for The Southeast Asia Travel Show on either platform. And we're also now on the Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher pod apps.
That's a wrap for this week. We'll be back later this week with the Friday Rewind Show, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, bye-bye.